Have you served on a board? You should. Learn why and how on this episode of the Speaking Your Brand podcast with Shireen Motera. More and more women are making an impact by starting businesses, running for office, and speaking up for what matters. With my background as a TV political analyst, entrepreneur, and speaker, I interview and coach purpose-driven women to shape their brands, grow their companies, and become recognized as influencers in their field. This is Speaking Your Brand, your place to learn how to persuasively communicate your message to your audience. Hello there, and welcome to the Speaking Your Brand podcast. I'm your host, Carol Cox. In this episode, we're talking about boards, why and how you should serve on a board, whether it's a corporate board or a nonprofit, because it's an excellent opportunity for you to broaden your network, build those relationships, but also to gain some skills and visibility that is unique to serving on boards. I've served on boards over the years, and the relationships that I've made have been such an important part of building Speaking Your Brand. I think back to, oh gosh, this is now going on 15 years ago, so quite a while, when I became chairperson of my local Democratic Party. So it's kind of like a board. It's a volunteer position. But in this case, I had to be elected to it by the members instead of being appointed to it. But I look at it as a board because it gave me a lot of visibility. It definitely broadened my network. I was relatively new to the Metro Orlando area, and those relationships that I built way back 15 years ago still are with me today. In fact, the day that I'm recording this intro tonight, I'm going to be back on the news talking about politics as we lead into the presidential election of 2020. Well, the opportunity for me to be on the news came because I was chairperson of the Democratic Party. So serving on a board, in a sense, gave me that media opportunity. Now, 15 years later, I still do it. I've also served on boards for women's entrepreneurship, for progressive leaders. And again, it gave me so much visibility. It also improved skills in certain areas. I'm also thinking of a client of mine, Teresa McCloy, who was on the podcast earlier this year, episode number 112, called Deciding on Your Signature Talk Topic. Well, she was recently asked to serve on the global board of the Enneagram. The Enneagram is an assessment tool that Teresa has used with her clients and her business. She also has a podcast all about the Enneagram. So she was recently asked to serve on this board, and this is a worldwide board. So this is going to give her huge visibility as well as speaking opportunities. So this is why serving on a board can be such a benefit to you personally, your personal brand, but also to your business. Now, there's another reason why I, in particular, am really passionate about women serving on boards, because here are some statistics that are rather sobering. In the U.S., women represent only 16% of the board positions of the 3,000 largest companies, only 16% of the 3,000 largest companies. And of those, at least 600 of those companies have no women serving as board directors at all. Now, if we kind of take those 3,000 largest companies and we go a little bit smaller and we just look at the Fortune 500 companies, so the largest 500 companies, women have 22% of board seats. So a little bit better than 16, but still only 22% of board seats are held by women in Fortune 500 companies. Now, these statistics are actually pretty similar to women in politics. In state legislatures and then in the U.S. Congress, women represent about 20 to 25%. Of those seats. Now, women are 50, 51% of the population. So we should be getting closer to that 50% mark in representation. There are a number of things, or a number of reasons why this hasn't happened. And actually, my guest today, we talk about some of these things, not only regarding boards, but just regarding women's representation in general. But here's what's interesting is that studies have shown that when companies have more women on their boards, the companies actually perform better. They're more profitable. They have more inclusive cultures. So it seems to be that companies would benefit greatly from having women on their boards, but it hasn't happened at the rate that we would like. One of the reasons is because when we at least for my generation, Generation X, when we grew up, we didn't see a lot of women on boards, especially prominent boards like Fortune 500 boards. And so we never thought of ourselves as serving on boards. I love this phrase, if you can see it, you can be it. So when we see other women on boards, we can then imagine it for themselves, which is why I'm such a big proponent of you all serving on boards, because then you are those role models. You are that representation for other women. My guest today is Shireen Mortera. She lives in South Africa, and she consults with companies and agencies like the United Nations on gender equality and women's rights, including on board diversity. For over two decades, Shireen has been working and volunteering for social justice. She's held roles in management, coaching, executive leadership, and consulting in South Africa and in the UK. And she volunteers her time to serve as a non-executive director on various boards and as a mentor to entrepreneurs. And she has backgrounds in coaching, law, HR, and business administration. Shireen is amazing. And you'll hear that as we get into the conversation. And this is a pretty deep conversation. We talk about how Shireen became interested in gender equality at a young age, why companies benefit from having more women on their boards, why there are so few women on boards, what it actually looks like to serve on a board. And I think as women, this is some of the information that we're lacking. We don't really know what it means to serve on a board, what our roles and responsibilities would be. So we talk about that. How to let organizations and companies know that you're interested in a board position. And then we also talk about the skills that you gain by serving on a board. Now, like Shireen, I've always been interested in women's rights and gender equality. This is what I studied in both undergrad and grad school. So you'll hear that we really do get into it in this podcast. Now, Shireen has been so kind to gift to all of you listeners a free PDF guide called What You Need to Know to Be Board Ready. Now, this is an extensive guide. It is so good. I highly recommend that you download it, read through it, and save it. And you can get that free PDF guide by going to the show notes for this episode, which is at speakingyourbrand.com/126. So the episode number, speakingyourbrand.com/126. Now, if you enjoyed this conversation and you would like to pop in and ask Shireen some more questions or to have more conversations like this, I invite you to join the free Speaking Your Brand community. It's a place for women speakers and entrepreneurs. You can get access by going to speakingyourbrand.com/join. Again, that's speakingyourbrand.com/join. Or you can text the word speaking to 444-999. Now, let's get on with the show. Welcome to the podcast, Shireen.
Thanks so much, Carol. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes, well, I am really excited for you to be here. We have connected a lot through LinkedIn and then also through the Speaking Your Brand community, private community. And I have been fascinated by the work that you do, and I wanted to have you on the podcast for a while. So I'm so glad that you're here today, because we're going to be talking about women on boards in general. So the importance of having women serving on boards, whether it's corporate boards, and this can be companies of all sizes, as well as nonprofits and non-governmental organizations. And you work with all these different types of boards. We'll talk about some of the research behind that and about how, as women, why we would want to serve on boards and how we can go about doing that. But before we get into some of those specific things, I really want to dig into a bit to the consulting work that you do and your background, how you got there, because it's so fascinating. Well, first of all, you live in Johannesburg, South Africa. You were born and you grew up in South Africa. And right now you do consulting on women's rights. And so, Shireen, tell us a bit about what exactly this consulting looks like. So what exactly are you helping these different agencies do? Why do they need you? And then we'll talk a bit about your background.
Okay, thank you. The consulting work that I do in women's rights and gender equality is primarily for funders and UN agencies and then some nonprofit organizations. The kind of work I do in that area includes developing gender strategies. So, for example, a recent client was UN Women that I assisted to review and improve a gender strategy for the Department of Energy. And that looks specifically around how to integrate women better into the energy value chain. Similar work that I do around women's rights and gender equality is also gender analysis. So, you know, our programs that are being implemented, taking into consideration the different needs of men and women. In our context, where we have high unemployment among youth, is it considering the specific challenges that young women face and how to integrate them into either employment opportunities, education opportunities, leadership opportunities? So that's the kind of work I do. Another recent project I did was with UNFPA in Mozambique, and that was looking at young women's economic empowerment. So the project was focused on ending early child marriage and ending pregnancy amongst young girls, and had a focus on economic empowerment and sexual and reproductive health rights. And I evaluated the economic empowerment aspect.
Oh, that's this is so fascinating to me, Shireen. So when I was in college, I was a member of the Model United Nations Club. So we would pretend that we were in the United Nations and at the university. And so we would meet probably every couple of weeks and talk about different issues related to international relations and foreign policy and all of that. And then one year, and then every year they would do a big conference in New York City, of course, at the UN headquarters. And so I went one year up there as part of the Model UN Club, and the country that we were assigned to was Mozambique.
Oh, wow.
And so when you said that, it just brought back those memories. I mean, this is now decades ago, but I've always really appreciated the work that the United Nations does. And I'm so glad to hear that they're doing a lot of work around gender in these different areas. So then, Shireen, it sounds like with your consulting, are you doing then a lot of research? So are you gathering information, gathering research and data, and then presenting it to them so that they can take action on it? Is that what that consulting work looks like?
Yeah, it's partly that. And I must tell you, I love the research part of it. I can sit and do research, you know, for hours and hours and get lost in it. So it's partly doing research, looking at what's already happening, what exists, what's happening in their sectors. But then it's also about, in a sense, customizing it. So, you know, within their area of work, their scope, how specifically can they implement it in a way that will bring change?
And how did you get involved in doing this consulting work? And well, let me ask first, how long have you been doing it? And then was this something where you saw someone else doing work like this and you thought, I would love to do this? Is this something where you were involved in something that the UN was doing and then they expressed a need? Or, you know, how does someone get involved in doing this work in the first place?
Yeah, it comes from my passion for women's rights in general. I got very involved with feminist groups when I was at university. And after that, I just wanted to work in the women's rights space. So I spent a lot of my formal career and in employment, but working for women's rights. And when I had the opportunity, I then left formal employment and went into consulting. And I did it because, yes, I saw other people do it, but I also thought, well, I have certain skills that I can offer. I don't necessarily have to do it whilst I'm at an employer. And because of the networks that I did have, I was able to get work, and it grew from there. So most of my consulting work, you know, comes a lot through referrals because of the work that I've been doing over, you know, the last 20 years or so. And many of my clients are people that I've previously done work for as well.
And Shireen, I like that you have a varied background and set of expertise and skills, because I think that's what makes you such a great consultant and researcher, because you have law degrees, so you have background in law. Obviously, you have background in gender studies and in women's rights. Now you also serve as a coach for women leaders. In addition to the consulting work that you do, you have a background in HR and business administration. So it sounds like you've been able to take all these different areas that not only are you interested in, but you have this expertise in, and find a way to bring it all together in what you're doing in your work.
Yes, that's very true. I I mean, I've got, you know, part of the reason why I feel I have all these skills is because I've been in different jobs. And I think it took me close to 20 years to realize I'm not an employee.
Yes.
So
yes.
I did a whole range of things. But as you say, now in my consulting work, and especially in my board work, I'm able to bring all of that together in one package and offer, you know, the kind of service that clients wouldn't necessarily get from a consultant that just specializes in one area.
That's true. And then, so you mentioned that you were involved in feminist groups when you were at university. Can you pinpoint what got you really passionate about women's rights and gender equality? Was there something in your childhood when you were growing up, or something that happened to you maybe in your schooling, where you can think that, oh, this is what really sparked my interest in this?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to my childhood. I grew up with parents who were very community orientated. My father was very much involved in the anti-apartheid movement, and my mother was a social worker. So they had a very strong foundation in the community and very active in the community. And then my parents divorced when I was 10. And, you know, I lived with my mother and could see how difficult it was for her to be a single parent. But, you know, she worked hard and did her best and so on. And I think it started there. And then when I got to university, you know, I met other young women who had similar interests, and we kind of created a group together. And, you know, from there, I learned a lot. That's where, in a sense, my feminist education started. And it grew from there, because then I just read books upon books and, you know, participated in a whole range of actions and activities.
Yeah. And so are there any books that you can think of right now that were really influential to you either back then, or any more recent ones that you would recommend?
Oh, not necessarily the book names, but the authors. Bell Hooks was one of the key Black feminists who really influenced my thinking. You know, she really helped me kind of frame the whole issue of feminism within the context of this intersectionality of, you know, it's not just being a woman or being, it's about being a Black woman in a certain context. You know, you have a certain class status, and, you know, all of that impacts where you are, how you are viewed, and also how you see the world. So she was very influential. But then I also read a lot of other authors, like, and they were not necessarily just writing about feminism per se, but Toni Morrison, Maya Angelou, Ntozake Shange, you know, there were a whole range of Black women writers that I read a lot about when I was at university and then in my early career and so on. And then it's also just been, you know, through the work that I've done, because I've always worked in women's rights, particularly in the area of gender-based violence. I've done lots of research and reading over the years that has really, in a sense, helped me stay committed to this.
It reminds me of a book that I just read recently, but it came out a few years ago called The Awakened Woman by Dr. Taraya Trent. Have you heard of her?
No.
No. Okay. I'll include a link in the show notes to this. It's really, she grew up in, maybe Nairobi. I'm trying to remember. And she ended up leaving. She was married at 14, or had her first child at 14. I think she ended up having four or five children by the time she was 20 years old, because that's, you know, she was from a more of a rural village when she grew up. And then she ended up, though, getting an opportunity to come to the U.S., was able to get her degrees. She ended up getting a master's degree and a PhD in the U.S. and has written this amazing book and is a speaker now and goes around, and she's been on Oprah and, you know, all those things. But now she's building schools back in her, not only in her village, but in other neighboring villages, so that girls can get the education mm-hmm. that they don't usually get even to this day.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, and there are a lot of African women, you know, African feminists. I currently work with a client called the African Gender Institute, where they are, you know, they do a lot of research that is African feminist focused. And they also work with young women on campuses to kind of build their leadership and their voice and agency in relation to campus issues, but then also, you know, beyond that once they go into the working world.
Right. Yeah, that's so important, all this work that we're doing now worldwide. So, Shireen, let's talk about women on boards, because this is really what I think I saw some posts that you were doing on LinkedIn back a few months ago, and I haven't specifically talked about this on the podcast yet, even though I've mentioned it here and there on different episodes, but I haven't specifically had an episode on women serving on boards. So talk to us about the importance for companies, for nonprofits, for all different types of entities to have women serving on boards. What does that do? What does it do for the entity itself, the company or the nonprofit? And then what does it do for the, well, obviously the issues and policies that they're working on, but then for the women themselves?
If you start with, you know, the sustainable development goals, for example, and a lot of companies are now focusing on meeting the commitment of those goals. Sustainable Development Goal 5 is around gender equality. So as a starting point, you know, having women on boards, having women participate in boards, having women lead boards contributes to the Sustainable Development Goals. But I think, you know, I always come from a human rights perspective. And for me, it's also, it's about giving women their space, their human rights in relation to equal, being equal citizens in the world. And for me, that should be the starting point, you know, that we, as much as men, we exist in this world and we have a contribution to make, and therefore we should be given space to make that contribution. But other than that, I mean, there's been a lot of research, research in the US, research in Australia, research in South Africa as well, around the value add of having women on boards. It increases profitability, it improves decision making, it improves the company cultures, and specifically, it helps to address issues like the way women are treated in organizations, women's ability to access leadership positions in organizations, as well as protecting women from issues like sexual harassment and gender-based violence. So those are a few of it. You know, some of the other research has shown that women also bring something specific to boards, which is around the higher levels of integrity, being able to bring a different kind of culture to boards, a different kind of engagement to boards that is more open, that is more collaborative, and also getting more deliverables out of what boards do in that sense, because women are diligent in terms of ensuring that when they commit to something like this, they deliver.
We get the work done.
Yes, indeed.
And so I've seen studies like this as well. And this includes even for Fortune 500 companies. So large yes. companies, as well as medium sized companies and nonprofits, about increased profitability, increased performance of the company, better decision making, all of that. Yet it's still the numbers of women who serve on boards, especially for larger companies, is so low. I think a recent statistic I saw was maybe 6% of Fortune 500. Well, I think 6% of Fortune 500 CEOs are women. And then probably the boards is in the teens, like the, you know, teen percentages. So we know that it's better for women to serve on boards. So then why aren't they?
So I think they're two, in a sense, they're two reasons, main reasons why that happens. The first is the kind of patriarchal culture that we exist in, which, you know, we have certain stereotypes about women and women's roles, and therefore we do not see women as being leaders, and we do not see women as being decision makers in, you know, these big companies. But the second part of that is also that my experience with my networks and the women that I know are highly accomplished and skilled and so on, they just have a fear of boards. And I think it's more a fear of the unknown. You know, so they feel they don't know enough about boards. They don't know how much of their time it's going to take. You know, are they going to be put under pressure? Are they going to be embarrassed? You know, what exactly is it that they're going to experience when they do take the step to sit on board? So I think there's, you know, it's those two issues, but they in a sense influence each other, because I think because of what women experience in general in the world, in the workplace, around sexism, around harassment, but also about not being valued, their opinions, their agency and so on, not being valued. It's a tough ask to get more women to, you know, to put themselves out there for boards.
Yes, this is such an excellent point, Shireen, about, because we don't have that many role models of women that we see on boards. And also boards tend to be not invisible, but they're not, we don't see them on TV. Like you don't see, right, a group of people having a board meeting on TV. So we don't really know what it's like. And usually we don't have people close to us many times who have ever served on a board. So let's talk a little bit about what exactly does it mean to serve on a board? What is that type of, what does the work look like?
Okay, so I mean, I've served on board since 1999, and then I was only in working full time for about less than 5 years. But because I felt I had a contribution to make, and particularly because of my women's rights work, and I know that those issues don't get discussed in those places, I had asked my boss to nominate me to sit on this academic institutions board, and it just went from there. The kind of role that it is that you need to, it needs a certain level of skill and experience. So you do need to, you know, you need to know either your sector that you're working in, or you need to be able to be a little bit of an expert or qualified in certain areas so that you can contribute. So with me, it was my legal background that helped me, but also my work in the gender space. The other thing that you have to consider as well is the time that you need to commit to it. So it can be, you know, often if you really, and we as women, you know, if we commit to something, often, you know, we go full in. So what it means is that it's not just a quarterly meeting that you need to attend, it's preparation for that meeting. There may be ad hoc issues related to the area that you're focusing on the board. So for example, I'm the human resources chair of the committee of the board. And therefore I had to last year drive the recruitment of a new CEO, which took a lot of my time. So there are those kinds of sacrifices that you have to make. And you also have to be really clear about why you want to do it. Because if you want to do it just because, for example, you say, no, I need it on my CV, and then you don't commit to it, it could be a reputational risk for you.
Shireen, this is a great point about knowing why you're doing it. So I'd imagine that for women who are listening who do want to serve on a board, that it would be better to find a board, an organization or a company where they really feel like they align with that organization's or company's mission and values, so that they can really feel like the time and energy investment that they're making is worth it for them. It's almost like volunteering for a nonprofit, but you're volunteering in a board capacity versus just doing some type of, you know, other type of administrative or volunteer work.
Yeah, exactly. Like in the nonprofit space, often those are non-remunerated roles. But just if you are committed to a specific cause or there's something in your community that you are really passionate about, sitting on the board is one way of adding value. And the reason why I say that is because at the board level, you are able to help with determining strategy, ensuring financial sustainability, making sure that the programs that are being implemented are impactful and are creating change. So there's a lot of value in sitting on a board. But then often also you can sit on corporate boards, you can sit on public sector boards. Many of those boards you do get remunerated for. And I, for one, would advise women to consider those. You know, I kind of say, think of it as a retirement plan for the future. So if you have the skills and you have the experience and you can sit on corporate boards or public sector boards, and get remunerated for it, why not?
Let's start with the unpaid ones first. So the most likely the nonprofits, even some of the smaller companies where board members oftentimes are advisors to the company as well, but they may be unpaid. So if it's unpaid boards, what is the best way for us to go about letting an organization know that we're interested in serving on their board?
There are a number of ways you can do that. One is obviously you can approach the organization directly and say, you know, I really like the work you're doing and I'd like to make a contribution. If you ever have a position available, you know, I would be interested and I'd bring these skills and experiences and so on in order to support you. The other is to, through your networks in your community, your friends, your colleagues, and so on, is to put word out that you're interested in serving on the board in a volunteer capacity or providing support. You could also, there are some bigger, and particularly in the US, I'm sure there are bigger nonprofits who do pay board members. And some of them recruit board members through recruitment agencies who kind of do headhunting or exist specifically to recruit board members. So that's another way of doing that. And then the other is social media. You know, we all are on social media. If you are visible, you could be approached. But you could also, through like your LinkedIn profile, for example, you could make it clear that you are open to board appointments and you are open to board appointments in specific areas. So you may want to be clear also about which areas of focus or which sectors are you particularly interested in. And that's, you know, those are some of the ways in which you can get onto those boards. Some of them also put out advertisements and then you can respond to those advertisements.
Oh yeah. These are all really great ways. And For myself, I've served on a number of boards over the years, and I think all of them, I'm trying to like running through my mind, I think all of them were through my network. So through relationships that I had in my community, and generally I was approached and asked if I would be willing to serve on the board for that particular organization. And to your point, the time commitment varied, you know, what exactly the role of the board varied. So sometimes we just met monthly, just really as a sounding board, as advisors to talk about what the organization was doing. Some of them, the boards I've served on, I've actually done workshops for the members of that organization. So I would do workshops related to obviously public speaking and speaking your brand related to that. And so, which was great. And so it enabled me to give back to that organization, but it also was great visibility for me in my local community, much the same way speaking, which is why I'm such a big advocate for speaking, is a great way for visibility and building those relationships.
Yes, exactly. I think that there is a lot of value in being on boards, even in a voluntary capacity. The exposure that you get, the growth that you get from it. You know, I don't think I would ever, through my consulting or being employed, have got the kind of skills that I have where I am now, in terms of, you know, financial management, organizational sustainability, strategy, development of strategy, you know, of organizational strategy, and impact and so on. You really, as much as you give, you also get a lot out of it. But I do want to make women aware also that they must also do their own due diligence. You know, you need to also understand what that organization is doing. Is it the kind of organization that you want to work with? Is it the kind of organization that you want to be connected with? You know, are you sure that they are ethical in the way in which they do what they do? You know, are their finances in order? Do they have any other issues that may have come up in the past? So it's worth doing some due diligence from your side as well before you commit to an organization.
Oh, what an excellent point, Shereen. I'm so glad that you brought this up because your reputation becomes tied to the other organizations and people that you're around as well. So if there's an organization that it may seem very prominent, But to your point, maybe they're having some issues behind the scenes and you don't necessarily want to get involved in those because it may not either because it could be just a big time commitment unexpected on your part, or it just may be that it's just not something it's great for you to just tie yourself to at that moment in time.
Yes, exactly. And you know what, the way things are now with social media and visibility, but also the fact that the environment is so much more transparent and open now, it means that we really have to go in with our eyes wide open into any organization and be sure that, you know, that we are comfortable to be a part of or support for that organization.
Yes. And also what you said about it helps you to improve your own skill set. So many of us, I know I'm growing Speaking Your Brand into, I want to scale it, to be able to impact and help more women. But there's a lot of skills that obviously I just haven't had because I haven't been the leader of another large company. But serving on a board that has, say, a multi-million-dollar budget, you learn things related to that you don't learn when you have just been in your own business as a solopreneur and then even as a small business owner, because you don't have the same scale of budget. You don't have the same number of volunteers or employees or different things that are going on. And you can learn those as being on a board without but you're not fully responsible for it like you are in your own business.
Also, you learn new skills around like problem solving, conflict management, working with a number of people at your level that you have to engage with, because, you know, often we the bosses in our organizations, and so we make all the decisions and so on. But when you're in a board scenario, for example, it's very much about consensus, collective decision making, engaging, discussing, debating. And that alone allows you to also grow your skill set in relation to leadership, decision making, being decisive, being assertive, being confident. And you can take that back to, you know, your own business or workplace.
I love this, Shireen. I'm now feel incredibly motivated to go look for an organization or even a small business that I want to serve on as a board member, because I definitely see there's so many benefits to it. And for those of you listening, I hope this has sparked your interest in finding an organization or a company that you can also start taking a look at and getting to know and see if serving on their board would be a good fit for you. Shireen, where can listeners find out more about you and what you do?
My website, shireenmotara.com. Some of the work that I do and the way in which I work is visible there, as well as my clients. And then I am on LinkedIn, Shireen Motara. And this is on Facebook, I run a specific group around fundraising, which is to support the nonprofits that I work with, but also in South Africa and on the continent, to access fundraising opportunities and strengthen their fundraising skills. But I'll give you the link for that. So if you have any members who may be interested in that, they could go there.
Okay, fantastic. I'll make sure to include the links in the show notes to your website, your LinkedIn profile, as well as to your Facebook group. Well, Shireen, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I so appreciate your knowledge and your expertise and your background in this topic. Like I said, it's one that I've been wanting to cover for a while. And so I'm really appreciative of your time today and sharing everything with us. And for the listeners, you can join us in the free Speaking Your Brand community. Shireen's a member of that as well. So when this episode comes up, if any of you have any additional questions for Shireen about boards, I'm speaking for her now, but I'm sure she would be happy to pop in and answer and point you in the right direction. So to get access to that free community, just go to speakingyourbrand.com/join. And you can get access there. Well, Shireen, thank you again for coming on the podcast today.
Thanks so much, Carol. I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you again to Shireen for coming on the podcast and sharing such really useful information for us. So I hope that you do go out, start looking around, see what organizations, nonprofits, companies are out there that you feel would be a great fit for you to serve on their board. I'm excited because in the next episode, I'm starting a series on confidence. So this is going to be a series of podcast episodes that all relate to this idea of confidence. I sent out a survey a couple of weeks ago asking my email list and people in the Speaking Your Brand Facebook group to answer one question, which is, what is your number one challenge, problem, or struggle related to public speaking? So thank you to all of you who took a couple of minutes to submit that survey. It has given me and my team so much valuable information that we're going to use to create more programs, workshops, trainings, and podcast episodes to address those challenges that you're having. But one of the things that came up a lot in different ways was this idea of confidence, whether it's battling nerves, feeling more confident standing on stage, to really feeling confident to put yourself out there, to put your message out there, to ask for paid speaking engagements. So we're going to be addressing that in this series. If you haven't yet subscribed to the podcast, you're going to want to make sure to do that now in your podcast app. Just click the subscribe button. That way you won't miss these future episodes. Until next time, thanks for listening.